Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and T-Wig.
It's like Mike and Mike, but Tony and Tony.
That's right.
Today here for Jaguars Today as I welcome in T-Wig. And first of all, man, I know the boys didn't take you on the caravan up to Hoover, so you're missing out on SEC Media Days. How's the week away from the microphone been for
Well,
you?
It's spent filling up my other commitments and actually going out and taking care of the other part of this business that people don't see, and that's getting in touch with people. But I'm having a lot of fun. You know, I know they're having a good time up in Birmingham, but I'm just like that relative that doesn't really have a home.
Sure.
That just shows up and spends the night at a couple of people's house, you know, all during the week. Like,
right.
Okay, he's over here today. He's over there today, you know. So, yeah, that's pretty much where I am and what I'm doing, man. But I'm glad. TNT, you know, that means an explosion.
Oh, it does.
That's dynamite, by the way.
You know, I've had the stay-at-home vacations before. Last year I took one because I just needed the time away from everything. So mm-hmm. I was just like, look, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to sit at home and read books. Like, that was the plan. It's like, I need a couple days off. And I found myself virtually every day wanting to yell about something that was going on in the sports world and trying to find, you know, that avenue to get it out. It's pretty cool to have the opportunity every day to come in, and when something really irritates you, you can
spout it out.
You can vent
right. You can
a little bit
out.
About it. When you have something that you want to react to, you can talk about it. We try to give the fans an avenue to do that as well, because, look, we understand the frustration of sitting on your mm-hmm. couch and watching somebody say something stupid and looking over at your wife and going, can you believe this idiot? And she has no idea what you're talking about. She just leaves the room because she's trying to read her book, and she's done with you
right.
in that moment because you're mad about sports again, and it's irrational for you to be mad about it. So we understand.
I find myself getting up with nothing to do, though. So I've been getting my exercise in, getting that up. I've made a lot of doctor's appointments this week. And let's just like I said, a lot of meeting with potential clients and doing sales and all of that stuff. So I'll be ready to go when those boys come back next week.
Yeah, we got a lot of Jaguar issues to dive into today. T-Wig's going to be with me here for the next hour or so, and we'll keep you updated on all that. Again, going to get into that article from John Osier talking about the five most important mainstays on this team. That's the theme for the question of the day today. Tom Bush, Family of Dealerships, ask you what drives you as the fans. And today we're asking you what player that is a holdover from before when Gus and Dave arrived here in Jacksonville is the most important for the team's success in 2014. And we'll get to some of your responses via Twitter a little bit later on. You can tweet us at 1010XLFatTony, at AmpWig, or at 1010XLLauren. And again, we'll get to those responses later on in the program. We're also going to get into some of the position battles and groups here for the Jacksonville Jaguars and where we may see some surprises as far as how good they may actually be at certain positions. We'll dig into that. But before we get into any of the football talk, last night was pretty awesome. And the All-Star game honoring Derek Jeter. Baseball, for whatever reason, seems to get those moments right more than any other sport. You know, what to do to honor these guys that have been around for 19 and 20 years. And last night was another example of it. It was chilling. I was alone in my living room last night when they introduced Derek Jeter, and I stood and clapped. Like,
wow.
And I hate the Yankees. Like, there's not many brands in the world I hate like the New York Yankees, but Derek Jeter I have the utmost respect for, and by myself, I was standing up and applauding the guy as he's making his 14th and final All-Star appearance. He goes 2 for 2. I mean, the night was magical last mm-hmm. night for Derek Jeter and baseball fans.
It was, and the thing is, for me, I really enjoy nights like that, especially when it's a Yankee, because I'm a Yankee fan. And as much as they're hated, as much as they're disliked, the last two guys, Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera, that were acknowledged in that way, not just during the All-Star game, but during the season as a whole, it makes you almost want to like them a little bit.
It does.
So is it the fans? Is it all the winning? George Steinbrenner's not here anymore, so what's the problem with that? Why don't people like the Yankees? If you individually like the guys, what is it about the pinstripes, Tony, that just drives you crazy?
Here's what it is, because the Yankees represent everything that is right and wrong with sports.
Right.
It's both in the same kind of mix, because Derek Jeter is a homegrown guy. That's a guy they drafted, they developed, they mm-hmm. brought up. He's theirs. But on that same team, You know, it's A-Rod. They're bringing it, it's this idea of we're going to go buy a championship too.
And Boston doesn't do that.
Right. Well, Boston does it too. I don't like the Red Sox.
Okay.
I have no love for the Red Sox. I'm a Braves fan, bro. And we developed our own talent for a long time, still making trades based on the talent in our farm system. Now, there's something to be said for doing it via free agency. I'm not one of these people who blames the Yankees for going out and buying players. If you can afford it, do it.
Well, here's from a Yankee fan. Here's why I believe it's necessary. You make all that money from the Yes Network, all of that revenue. You make all of that money, then you need to go spend it.
Sure.
You need to build a winner, and you need to. I don't like the fact that it seems like they do it at the expense of their farm system. Because for years I've heard the Dodgers have had the best farm system, and now they're buying players.
No,
they're doing the same thing.
When you get money, you start spending it.
And you have to. I think you're obligated to do that.
But yeah, they represent everything that's right and wrong with sports. Mm-hmm. That is the New York Yankees, and that's fine. I still continue to respect guys like Derek Jeter, and thought it was pretty cool the way that baseball, at least the All-Star game, sent them out. I can't imagine what it's going to be like for the last couple weeks of this regular season, especially if the Yankees aren't in a playoff hunt at
right.
that point in time. Mm-hmm. Because last year, my favorite moments in sports were the stuff that happened with Mariano Rivera. And mm-hmm. again, I don't like the Yankees, but I thought the way that the baseball and the Yankees said goodbye to those kind of legends is unlike any other sport. With the Jaguars, I was thinking about it last night. I was like, who gets this kind of send-off? You know, in football, how do you get this kind of send-off? And I think the Jags last year, fans appreciated what they did for Meester during that final home game, giving him a chance to catch a pass. I mean, that's something that whoever was at that stadium, that they will always remember that Brad Meester, for all the things that he did for this team, he got to catch a pass
mm-hmm.
the last time that he was in front of his home fans. But how many guys really get that chance at any other sport other than baseball? I just, you don't see it all that often.
Right, and we were talking on that subject one day on XL about the Jaguars. When you're to the point where the Yankees are, where you're loved and you're hated and you're polarizing, that's when you know you're doing something right.
Sure.
So it's going to be interesting to me. Here's the narrative. Here's the story that I think is going to take place. The Jags are going to start winning, right? They are. They're going to start winning
it's
at some
happen.
Point. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be all this Jaguar love, and then you're going to have a contingent of people that's going to hate the Jaguars because they're going to think that it's a bunch of bandwagon people jumping on the ship. Sort of like there's a lot of people on the Seattle boat right now. There were a lot of people in basketball on the Miami Heat boat. That's what happens. But the fans here aren't going to get the credit that they deserve because there are 50, 60,000 loyal ticket buyers here in this city that have been with the Jaguars through the lows.
Sure.
You know? And speaking on something else real quick, when you talk about guys that don't get the proper send-off, guys like Brett Favre, who you're going to bring up later about mm-hmm. something that's going on with him, some guys deserve to not get it. And I think Brett Favre to me.
I love Brett.
You know what? I like Brett. He played football with a Pete Rose type love for the game. But Brett Favre makes me sick.
Why's that?
I'll tell you when you get into it. Because he absolutely, and he did something else. He said something else that just gets under my skin.
We'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, Brett Favre is talking again. People want to talk to Brett. It's not about a return to the NFL this mm-hmm. time either, thankfully. We're not talking about that. Look, if someone's going to pay me, like we said, you should spend it if you got it. If I was Brett Favre and the Rams came to me and said, hey man, we'll give you $4 million, come back. All right. Like,
yeah.
Sign me up.
I'd sling it around.
Where else am I going to get that kind of payday? And a lot of people blamed him for that kind of stuff. I don't. Look, someone's going to pay you, get paid, son.
Get paid.
That's the way this world works. But we'll get into Brett Favre a little bit later. We're going to dig into John Osier and his take on the top five guys that have been here for more than 2 years in Jacksonville that need to come through this year if they're going to make it to the heights that they want to in 2014. So we'll talk about the most important pieces from before Gus and Dave. That's coming up here on Jaguars Today. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant grease trap service, and much more. Same day service, Saturday and Sunday included. The right people, the right equipment, serving Jacksonville since 1978. Just go to MetroRooter.com or call 904-695-1911. T-Wig alongside me, Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey on vacation all week long. We'll keep you locked and loaded on Jaguars Today, getting into John Osher's article next here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Mm-hmm. All right. Rolling on here on a Wednesday on Jaguars Today. I am Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey on vacation, T-Wig in here with me for the next 45 minutes or so as we talk some NFL football and Jaguars. But first, the theme. What do we have here, Wig?
Well, I'm bobbing my neck. That song is called Break Your Neck. That's Busta Rhymes,
yep,
produced by Dr. Dre. And Lauren always comes with that Dr. Dre with me, man, because she knows that I'm a huge Dr. Dre fan.
Is well, that it?
And you basically, yep, you already nailed the theme. I predicted you would get it song two. I should have been even better.
We're getting Dre all day?
Dre or related artists to Dre.
Look
exactly
at that. Look at Lauren taking care of me.
Ooh, I like it.
Well, Tony got Monday, so you get today, and then
yeah,
Tony will
Monday
get Friday again.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll get Friday.
Yep.
Whenever I'm in the studios at the home at 1010, whenever she plays something like that, I forget that she can see me, and she can see me really getting it, and I see her start laughing all the time, so... Yeah, Lauren knows I'm a huge Dr. Dre.
Nah, I like that theme today.
I figured you'd like it too.
Enjoy Dre. Yeah, I've told Lauren before, I like hip hop and hard rock as the rejoins. That's my preference, is hip hop and hard rock.
First hip hop billionaire. He made $3 billion in the sale of Beats by Dre to Apple. First hip hop billionaire.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, it is.
That's cool that somebody finally got to that.
He grew up. I mean, he used to be really, really rugged and street, talking about stuff that we all knew about, and then he changed and he kind of, you know, went a different route and he got paid.
Yeah,
good for him.
Good for him. You get $1 billion doing whatever, man.
$3 billion.
I'm cool with you.
Me
I'm
too.
Cool as long as it ain't, you know, Pablo Escobar.
Like, yeah, yeah, right.
Stay out of cocaine. Like if you're selling hip hop, I'm cool. Like, if that's how you make your money, that's cool by me. All right, let's take a look at some Jaguar storylines. John Ocher wrote an article. He's doing his basically preview, getting ready for training camp. By the way, we're 9 days away from them.
I can't believe
field.
It, man. I'm starting to get that itch, and I'm getting excited.
8 days, everybody reports. The rookies report, I think, a week from today or 6 days from today, something like that.
Right.
So their vacation is almost done completely. But in 9 days, everyone will be out there on the field for the first training camp practice that will be open to the public at 9:55 a.m. Mike and I will be out there live for Jaguars Today from training camp. So we look forward to seeing you out there. Stop by, say hello next week, and be sure to wear your Jaguars Today t-shirt as Wig is today.
That's right, baby.
If you come by
well
and say
done,
hello.
Well done, T-Wig.
And so John Ocher is doing his preview, getting ready for camp starting up next week. And the latest article is about he called it the mainstays, but basically his definition was a player that is with the team that was 3 years ago. So basically before Gus and Dave got here, these players that are still here on this roster, and he did a top five list. I told Wig we were going to get into this, and he guessed at who he thought would be on the top five. And so for Osher's article, we'll go from 5 to 1. And then discuss maybe some of the guys that were left off the list or should be moved around, however you want to look at it. Number five, he had Mercedes Lewis. And Mercedes had a really good last month of the season last year. They don't have much else at tight end as far as guys that are going to go make big plays for him. Zach Miller has been all right. I mean, there's not much else there for them at tight end. Clay Harbor, me. I mean, they're hoping to get something out of Marcell Jensen. Who knows what they're going to get out of that guy. But Mercedes Lewis at number five, Tyson Alualu at number four. And that's an interesting one to me because I think 2014 is more important for Tyson Alualu than Tyson Alualu is for the Jags in 2014.
I'm with that all day,
and
what you just said. You're right.
And Josh Scobie at number three. Look, this is a team that hasn't been able to score a lot of points in the last couple of years, so when they have opportunities, they need to come through on them. So Scobie being on this list doesn't bother me one bit. Cecil Shorts at number two. Cool.
Cool with it because if you don't put him there, then you're dependent on rookies.
Sure, and this is a guy who's going into a contract year. He's shown the ability to make big plays. He's been really productive for this team when he's been healthy, and that's with Blaine Gabbert and Chad Henne playing quarterback. So you would hope that there would be some connection still there between Shorts and Henne. And number one on his list is Paul Posluszny, middle linebacker, obviously the captain of that defense. He's the guy who went to the Pro Bowl last year. They have a lot of hopes for what's going on in front of him on the defensive line, but not a lot of guys that have been in Jacksonville very long, so they're not a part of this list. There is one guy that could have been that wasn't a part of Osher's list, but the couple guys to you that stand out that were not even mentioned among those five.
Chad Henne is number one because what they do at quarterback has really been the big talk of the offseason. First of all, they used the top three pick on a quarterback. There's been so much debate on whether or not their plan for him to not play is a big deal.
Is it a red flag? Is it this? Are they doing it the right way? And this, that, and the third.
But Chad Henne's play as the starter is going to dictate how fast I believe that they move and the pressure they're going to get to play Blake earlier than they want to play him. And then Chad Henne's success or lack of success will be huge and instrumental as to how much progress the team is actually making, because as goes the quarterback, usually that's the way the team is going to go. So I'm surprised that he's not on the list. Maybe I misunderstood what the list was supposed to be, but I think he is probably the most important player on the team this year, whose play is going to impact, have a big of impact on the direction of the ball club in the near future and in the future.
Chad Henne's in an interesting spot because, kind of like what I said about Tyson Alualu, that 2014 is more important for him than it is for the team as far as how he performs. To some degree, I feel the same way about Chad Henne, not to the same degree that I do about with Tyson Alualu. I think that the decision that the team made to bring Chad Henne back was something, it was an informed decision based on what they thought was available to him in the draft. I think that they knew when they were going into free agency that Blake Bortles was a guy they really liked going into this draft. They might be able to get him at number three, but he, like everyone else in the draft, isn't ready to play yet. Mm-hmm. So we need to have something that can be on the field for us without having to throw this guy to the wolves. I think that is the extent of the belief in Chad Henne. It's the extent of the belief in Chad Henne for me, because you can look at his career stats. They're not good.
Right.
He's never been a good quarterback in this league. He's been an adequate quarterback in this league. That's what he is. He's a guy that you want to have start two or three games when your guy goes down, because he may be able to win a game or two for you. But he's not going to win eight. He's certainly not going to win 10, and definitely not going to do that kind of thing with this roster. So Chad is in this kind of weird space where I do believe the team can only go as far as Chad Henne can carry them. But I think even Chad Henne at his best this year is a guy that can carry them to 7-9.
Right. Well,
if he played the whole year.
And if the team around him is good, he could be what McCown was to Chicago. I mean, he's the kind of guy on a playoff or championship contender that at any moment can come in, and if your quarterback's out for 6 weeks, he can run you to a 4-2 record over that six week period. But as far as the direction of the team and the franchise, all of the talk is that Blake Bortles is the future, right?
Sure.
And all of the talk is that they're not going to rush him to play. Now, what could rush him to play more than Chad Henne playing poorly? What could make you pull the trigger faster than that? Also, the direction of the team in terms of trying to change the, this is not the right word, but it's my word, you want to change the temperature mm-hmm. of the state of the franchise in the minds of all of the people that are watching. And if he can play well enough that the rest of the team, you can actually see what you have. If he can play well enough that you can evaluate your wide receivers. If he can play well enough that Mercedes Lewis can have the year that he's capable of having. That tells you a lot. See, for the franchise, Henne is the guy that's going to allow you to really see what you want to see more than anything else. Not only with the state of the franchise as a whole, but also it's going to give you time to do what you want to do with your future in Blake Bortles.
Sure.
Henne doesn't play well. Everything starts to change. Maybe you have pressure to put the kid in earlier than you want to. Maybe if Henne doesn't play well, you realize the kid is better than Henne. And it's better to go ahead and stick him out there now.
Right.
And just, I wouldn't say dummy down, but shrink the playbook a little bit so he can do the things that'll make him successful, that he does well while he's learning how to do the things that he doesn't want to do. So you have the rookie quarterback and you have the rookie receivers. And you have Mercedes Lewis, and you have Cecil Shorts. See, Henne affects other guys that are on this list, Shorts and Lewis, and then those rookies, and then that quarterback. Henne's the key to the entire situation and for you to get the proper evaluation that you need.
No, I agree with you. Look, he's the starting quarterback for this team.
Absolutely.
And as such, he's obviously the most important part. If they're going to be successful in 2014, he's the most important cog for that to happen, barring Blake Bortles coming in and wowing everybody when he gets to camp.
Right.
In a couple weeks. That would be the only exception to that, because when Blake is ready to play, I trust him. They've been honest with us to this point. When Blake, they feel like he's ready to play, Chad's done.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the bottom line. Chad's done. And I again relate it to the situation that the Giants were in when they drafted Eli Manning. And this is a guy that they traded away Phillip Rivers and multiple picks to go make sure they got the guy that they believed could be the future of the franchise, and Eli Manning, he sat down. For the first half of that season, he sat down. The Giants were a 5-3 team. They were in the middle of the wild card hunt on the NFC side with Kurt Warner as their starting quarterback.
Yeah, an MVP, a Super Bowl champion, and a person that's considered an arguable, a borderline Hall of Famer.
Right.
A borderline arguable first ballot Hall of Famer.
And they he was set him down.
And he was a lame duck.
Right.
But you had a Hall of Famer that was a lame duck.
Right. And his stats were very similar to what I think probably Chad Henne's will be this year. Kurt Warner was not having a good year for the Giants, but he was keeping them in games and competitive, and that was a team that maybe makes the playoffs if they play Kurt Warner the entire season. But they thought Eli may finally be ready, and this is about getting ready for next year and 2 years from now and 3 years from now. So you get the sense that at some point this year, they're going to pull the trigger at the quarterback position. It's going to be Blake Bortles' team, and they're going to go as far as he can take them. 2014, I'm not sure that they're worried all that much about a win-loss record. I'm curious, though, if Chad Henne comes out and he's bad for the first month of the year, and they don't feel like Blake is quite ready to be thrown in that fire, but we know that from the fan base, the noise is going to get louder and louder and louder by the week. How much heat is the team, the front office, and Dave and Gus willing to take before they say, all right, let's put the kid in? How much are they willing to protect him from what may be a bad situation if the offensive line doesn't gel? If you got a bunch of rookie receivers that you're counting on in this offense, how much are they willing to protect Blake from the roster at that point and just keep throwing Chad out there to the Wolves? Hopefully we don't get to that point in this season, but I'd be curious to see what it looks like if they do, because I it's all predicated on Blake, not Chad. And so are they willing to burn Chad if they feel like it helps Blake, even if Chad is struggling? I'm curious to see what the answer to that would be.
It is going to be an interesting answer, but the two guys that are on here that I consider safe are the safest guy. Posluszny, you know what you're going to get, barring injury, and he is important because he is the quarterback of the defense, and Scobie. I won't put a kicker on any list, and that's not a disrespect to Scobie, but one, he's a kicker, but two, he's consistent.
Yeah.
There's no worry there. Not for me. I think he's the top five kicker in the NFL. So, you know, if that's the case, I'm not concerned about that. I'm more concerned with Cetus Shorts being healthy to serve as a leader and a buffer for those young guys, because you don't want a bunch of rookies out there trying to run routes. Okay?
Sure.
I'm more concerned with Mercedes Lewis and how he plays. I think he could have a huge year with Jimmy Graham getting the money that he got last year, and with his role, Mercedes, he's finally going to be able to play the role that Mercedes Lewis was drafted to play. They're going to use him. And with questions at the quarterback situation and the potential to use a young quarterback, who's the best friend of a suspect veteran or a young guy that doesn't know what he's
doing?
A tight end standing in the flats, a 6'7" tight end who can be the best friend of the quarterback who can keep that team on the field on third down. So those guys, with all due respect to John Osher, who, you know, I love me some John Osher, but no, that's where I am. Alu-Alu, to me, the depth chart that I'm looking at on our last has him as a starter opposite Red Bryant. I seriously doubt that. I think he's going to split time with Red Bryant, and Red's going to start. So as a mainstay, yeah, he's one of only a few mainstays that could be on the list. But I do not view him as – he has more importance – this season is more important to him individually than he is for the Jaguars this year.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Before we step aside, there's a couple more names that I want to mention for this list before we get done talking about it. But we'll get to that here in just a moment. We do have Kevin on the line who wants to talk about some of these veteran guys here on the Jaguars. What's up, Kevin?
I think we're kind of missing the list. It is about mainstays. I think with all due respect to T-Wick here, Chad Henne, I don't see as a mainstay. He's only been here 2 years at this point in time. Started 2 years. I think Osher is really trying to showcase really people who are, you know, with all the flux and transitions of this team, guys who have kind of been the core, the nucleus of the team. And for better or for worse, Henne just hasn't been that the past few years.
Okay, but he's your starting quarterback. And the list is about guys that have been here. It's not about guys moving on to the future, because we know the future is Blake Bortles. The problem is when you start naming mainstays of guys who have been here and you don't name your quarterback in the top six, there's not a team in the league that would do that. The quarterback is the most important player on every team. And that's my issue with it. It's not an issue that I'm not going to get in an argument with John Osher in the hallways here, but it's just my opinion that you have Tyson Alualu in the top five, and unless was Henny here the last year before Caldwell and those guys got here?
Yes.
Okay, he was here, so that's the point. You have a defensive tackle who's projected to not even be a starter ahead of your starting quarterback. That's a problem anywhere. In Pop Warner.
Was Henny the starter either of those 2 years that the past 2 years? Was he designated the starter? No, he wasn't. He played less games than Gabbert. I mean,
okay, so let me ask you a question, and I don't want to be rude here. All right. Who's the most important player on any football team? A backup, five technique defensive tackle, or the starting quarterback on the team?
The starting quarterback.
There you go. There you go. That's it.
Again, is Henny going to be the starter by the end of the year? I think that's why I have a hard time defending Chad Henny as a mainstay. I think everyone seems to be the same.
No, but you're missing my point.
Appreciate the call, Kevin.
Right. The top three pick is the most important player. They don't want to play him. Okay, so the guy in front of him is going to be important to the success of the team because, one, he's going to be the starter, and he'll determine how many games you can win or lose that will let you evaluate your rookie wide receivers and keep your offense on the field and keep your defense off the field.
Sure.
The other thing is how well that guy plays will determine how quick you bring the other guy in, and does it make you get off of your trestle board or your blueprint to bring that guy in earlier than you want to bring in?
Absolutely.
Correct?
And we're not trying to tell people how to define mainstay. And
right.
We appreciate the conversation, and we'll continue to have it if you want to have it with us, 641-1010, as we discuss John Osher's article. Again, a couple players that haven't been mentioned yet that I think need to be if you're talking about potential key guys for the Jags moving forward that have been here since before Gus and Dave arrived. And believe me, there's not a whole lot of them left on this roster, and there's especially not a whole lot of them put in important positions at this point in time. But we'll get to a couple more of those guys, as well as take a look at maybe some of the surprise positions of depth for this team as well, some positions that may be stronger than even the fans right now realize they may be. We'll get into that as we continue on a Metro Rooter Wednesday from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute here on Jaguars Today on 1010X. 92.5 FM. Slim Shady. Welcome back.
Slim Shady, but Fat Tony singing Slim Shady, right?
That's right.
I like that.
Fat Tony here along with T-Wig. Wig with me here for at least one more segment as we dig into some football topics. Said a moment ago, we had a couple of names that we wanted to get out there that could have been on Osher's list that weren't, some of the guys that have been here for more than 2 years in a Jaguar uniform. We're asking you today to tune in, chime in as well on this question. It's our fan feedback question of the day on Twitter, at 1010XLFatTony, at Ampwig, at 1010XLLauren. We'll get to some of these responses a little bit later on, but who is the most important player that was here before these guys got here, before this new regime? Who are some of the guys that have still been around that are going to be the most important for 2014? We need one name from you. We've been talking a lot about Chad Henne, the other names that were on that list from John Osher. A couple guys that haven't been mentioned yet but need to be. One, Andre Branch is the guy that was drafted the year before they got here. Seemed to pick it up a little bit over the last half of last season, gained some confidence that he didn't have through that first year and a half of his career. He's a guy that's going to be now behind Chris Clemons on this depth chart, so hopefully has an opportunity to learn from one of the best at doing what Gus Bradley is asking that Leo position to do on defense, and we'll see how much he can progress. But if Branch can turn into something, that is a big, big bonus for the Jags.
And from what I heard, none of it matters until you actually put on pads, but every conceivable thing that he could have done in the offseason program, he's done it.
He looked quick.
Every conceivable thing he could do up to this point to appear to be a guy who can turn the corner. Things that he hadn't done in the past, he's done. So you got to take that in consideration.
A couple other guys on the offensive line, there's obviously big questions coming into 2014 as what it's really going to look like once they get on the field. We know the names that are probably going to be in that starting five, but how effective they're going to be. Mike Brewster was a guy that was brought in 2012. He's going to be the starting center in all likelihood for the Jags on opening day. And Austin Pastore, a guy that they also got before these guys got here, starting at right tackle, started a lot of games last year. They feel like he may be able to solidify that spot going forward for this team. And I know they're hoping that he can do that, and the fans are too.
Brewster making the line calls after they didn't get Mack in free agency. Everybody's talking about his strength or his lack thereof. I know he told us on XL that he was going out to spend some time with LeCharles Bentley, who's one of the foremost in the country at strengthening guys and working with offensive linemen. So he's very important to that. You know what?
Pastor, the reason why he's important, obviously, you need a guy at right tackle that can play well. But the other thing is, you know, we talk about guys that were drafted with the previous administration that didn't work. He has a chance, if he puts another real good year together, to be a real good one of those top 10 right tackle types in this league. And right tackles these days are almost just as important as left tackles.
Well, they're in a division with JJ.
Yeah.
He lines up there at left defensive end. That's where
so
the right tackle's
playing
block.
And so many people playing the 3-4 that you're always going to have to go against a pass rusher. It's
sure.
more 3-4s now than 4-3s. And even in the 4-3s, just like you said, even in the 4-3s or the 3-4s, where you're dealing with a guy like JJ in the 3-4 base, you're still getting pass rushers on both sides now. Teams are having pass rushers on both sides, so it's huge.
The Colts
it's
move important. Around Robert Mathis. He's not a guy that lines up on one side. He lines up wherever they feel like is the best matchup for Robert Mathis.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot more teams that are willing to move around their personnel, and maybe that's a reflection of what Seattle has been doing and teams trying to adapt some of that. The Giants, when they were making that first Super Bowl run with what they were doing on the defensive line, a lot of people were like, look, this works. Obviously, running in, you can't have too many pass rushers. People have been saying that in the league for years. But then seeing the success that the Giants had running that NASCAR package, as they like to call it, with four pass rush defensive
right.
ends on the field worked. And you move those guys around because you want to expose matchups. And I think the NFL gets a little stale at times, and then these new ideas come in. And you watch teams try to adapt to stopping it, and until they do, everyone does it. It's like the up-tempo offense. Until someone figures out a way to really slow down that up-tempo offense, we're going to see a lot more no huddle than we ever have, which brings us to, before we get you out of here, Wig, you said you wanted to talk a little bit about maybe a position group or two that you think could be a surprise for Jaguar fans when everything is said and done as far as the impact that they can have on the field.
The position that no one is really talking about because it's not considered a glamour position with big names are those linebackers. And I'm not talking about the middle, you know, P-Square's got the mic. Oh, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Paul Posluszny is the middle linebacker. He's the quarterback of the defense, and we know that. Dakota coming in from Tampa with his pass rushing ability as a Sam Leo in passing downs and his ability to just be on the field and run.
Sure. They're going to use him in that auto position a lot. That's where they want him.
That's right. You know, he's got to get healthy. I heard he has a groin issue that's been bothering him. Gino, with his speed, when you look at guys that can just flow to the ball, once you add guys like Red Bryant and you get bigger on the defensive front, then you just want your linebackers to fly all over the place. And, you know, we've done this ad nauseum. We've talked about the comparisons between Seattle and Jacksonville. And it's only because that's where Gus came from. It's because they're going to play that type of a defense. And, by the way, they're not being copycat. They're not a copycat team in that respect. This is what they were doing before Seattle, you know, became the Legion of Doom. So I'm not going to call them a copycat or let anybody say that. What they're doing is what they believe in. And if you watch back at some of the key highlights from the Super Bowl, there were times when Malcolm Smith and Michael Morgan were on the field at the same time. And people will go, well, who is Michael Morgan? You know, they don't know who Michael Morgan is. They don't know who these guys are. And that's where I think the surprise impact will come here, because they'll have packages where they just have a bunch of fast guys on the field playing at that second level behind the defensive line that aren't pass rushers. But what they could do is they run and tackle in open space really, really well. And it's key for this defense, and it's key for getting people off the field on first down. So you're going to see people like JT Thomas or John Latulele or Chris Smith or Telvin Smith. They wonder how they're going to use Telvin Smith. Is he big enough to take the every down pound? I don't think he has to. I think if you get teams in second and long because you can stop the run, and you get teams in third and long because you can rush the passer on second and long, you get second and nine, and the quarterback gets rushed, and now you're in third and nine, or they get a holding penalty, and you push him back, and it's second and 14, I think you'll see impact from these fast linebackers who will be able to use their ability just to run and play and tackle. And look, tackling is fundamental. You learn it when you're a kid, okay? All of the scheme stuff kind of goes out of the window when teams don't have time to scheme you up. If you can just run and hit.
Sure.
And get there and have confidence that that's what you're supposed to do. And you don't have to do all of these other things to help out your teammates because they're doing their job. Then you can just do your job. And I think that's where you're going to get the surprise impact from. There are going to be people on this list that you're going to talk about. There may be six guys
when you start looking at fantasy teams, that'll be on people's fantasy teams that play the dynasty leagues, because all of these guys will be able to tackle and make plays. And you see it in Seattle. It's not just Bobby Wagner. It's not just Bruce Irvin. It's not just, it wasn't just O'Brien Schofield who got a big time deal in free agency. It was Michael Morgan, you know? It was Smith.
It's whoever they put on the field was able to be productive.
That's right.
Because of the scheme that they were running, and they put these guys in positions to succeed. And it's the question of how they're going to use a guy like Telvin Smith in this defense. Look, we've had Telvin in, we've talked to him, and I asked him the question, what feels better? The sack, that the interception, you know, the pick six, what's your favorite thing? He's like, man, getting your hand on the ball. He's like, sacking the quarterback, putting a big hit on somebody, that's cool. But getting my hands on the ball and getting that turnover, that's what I want to have an impact doing. Well, guess what the Jaguars have been atrocious at for the past decade?
Creating
covering
turnovers.
The tight end.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They can't do it.
Right.
And Telvin Smith comes in as a guy that can run the way he can at the linebacker position. And I think part of the reason he's here is to take away the tight end at times from opposing offenses, because they're becoming more and more a part of the game as these spread offenses come in and these big athletic tight ends are coming into the game more and more. And Telvin is the type of athlete that may be able to limit the production of that position for opponents. And that's not something the Jags have had in a long, long time. When they came in and started turning this thing over last year, one of the things they talked about wanting to get here is speed, and it's here. When you look at this team 2 years ago and how slow they were compared to where they are right now on the field with what they can put on the field, especially a linebacker. We're just talking about Dakota Watson and Geno Hayes and Telvin Smith. These guys can run. I mean, these guys are athletic guys playing the linebacker position. That's not something that this team had.
Right, and you think about the type of defense that they want to play, and we won't mention Seattle again, but it's just the type of defense that they want to play. Here's why I mentioned Seattle, and I'll let this go. The two highest paid tight ends in the NFL right now, as of yesterday, are Jimmy Graham
mm-hmm.
and Vernon Davis.
Mm-hmm. Shut down.
Both. Yep. They got them both twice. They got Seattle in the play. I mean, they got New Orleans in the playoffs and in the regular season. And they had Seattle twice. They ate them up.
Yep.
And that's supposed to be something that slows down the pass rush, because that guy will get in the second level and he'll eat up these small, quick guys. But that type of defense just absolutely chews up two of the best tight ends in the NFL, athletic, big, fast tight, and it spits them out.
Yep.
And how do you do that? You do that with speed and you do it with scheme. And you do it with guys in the back like Cyprian or in that middle that can just punish them. Just punish them. And get to the quarterback before those guys are able to get to their spots, and be fast enough to be Johnny on the spot. Look what happened in the Super Bowl. What's your boy name out there in the Super Bowl, the tight end that they have out there running around?
Which one?
In Denver.
Oh, in Denver, it's Julius Thomas.
Where was he?
He wasn't there.
He was on a milk carton in the Super Bowl.
Like everyone else on that offense, he was.
Yeah, well, except Demaryius.
Yeah.
Demaryius is the only guy that played well. But where was he in the Super Bowl? He was on a milk carton. He was missing somewhere. Because of that type of defense that they play. It's the pass rush. It's the speed. It's not just speed without intelligence. It's speed with a navigation system. It's understanding where you're supposed to be, where you are. And you know what comes with that? That comes from this, Tony. I can be where I am
mm-hmm.
and where I'm supposed to be, and I can get there in a hurry because I don't have to cover for the other guy. And that's why the increase in veterans and an understanding of the defense and the increase in talent and personnel, you trust him so much that you can just go do what you're supposed to do as opposed to worrying about covering for another person.
Sure. Absolutely. You make a great point there, Wig. I appreciate you coming in for the hour today,
it's
bud.
Nothing. I wasn't doing nothing else, man. It was either this or play with my dog on the porch out at
Well, I appreciate that you chose me over the dog.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
It was a difficult decision.
The extent of our friendship. But T-Wig, I appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you again on Friday as the boys are back from Hoover. And we'll be wrapping up media days after that, and you'll be back in studio with the guys on primetime.
I go to work Friday.
You go to work Friday, buddy.
You know what? I'm glad you told me, because I thought I had to be there next Monday. See, I would have got in trouble. There you go. I go to work. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate
man.
It.
That was fun.
All right.
And that is T-Wig at AmpWig on Twitter. Again, you can hear him on XL Primetime weekdays.
I'm Lauren Brooks, your 1010 XL 92.5 FM, Heekin Orthopedic, local sports update. The 2014 Marine Max SEC Media Days roll on from Alabama, and XL Primetime and the Frank Franges Show with Rick Ballew continue our coverage today with coaches and players from Missouri, LSU, and Arkansas. The British Open starts tomorrow, and Tiger Woods is back in pursuit of a 15th major title at Royal Liverpool
after missing the first two majors this year because of spine surgery. Woods will tee off at 4.04 a.m. tomorrow alongside Angel Cabrera and Henrik Stenson. Defending British Open champion Phil Mickelson looks to reclaim the claret jug, teeing off at 9.05 with Ernie Els and Bubba Watson. The Jacksonville Suns' final long homestand of the season starts tonight against the Pensacola Blue Wahoos at Bragan Field at the baseball grounds of Jacksonville. Get out tonight for baseball bingo, and first pitch comes up at 7.05. Training camp for the Jags gets underway Friday, July 25th at 9.55 a.m., and that practice is free and open to the public. Head to jaguars.com/RSVP now in order to register, since you will need your proof of registration in order to enter. Remember, single-game tickets are now on sale with the world's largest video boards, cabana pool parties, and on-field seating. It's fantasy football for real. Buy your tickets now at jaguars.com. I'm Lauren Brooks with your 1010 XL 92.5 FM, Pekin Orthopedic, local sports update. More Jaguars today with Fast Tony and JP Shadrick coming up next.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is presented by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. At Best Fence, the mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Fencing is an investment in your home. Your family will feel protected, and you'll breathe easier knowing Best Fence installed your new fence. Best Fence provides professional free estimates at your convenience. Call them today at 904-268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net. For more information, got a couple cool birthdays to get into today, but before I get to the birthdays, I want to welcome in JP Shatterk.
Hello. JP? Hello, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing well. How's the week going?
Oh, it's great. I went to Dave Matthews last night.
Yeah?
It was pretty good. I've never been to a Dave Matthews show before. I'm always kind of curious about that. I think the highlight of the night was when he jumped into Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer. That was a pretty good song. That was a nice one. It was pretty good. Good show.
So that's the level of Dave Matthews fan you are. You were excited when he played the cover.
Somebody else.
Last night.
No, it was fine. And you know, around here these days, it's kind of quiet. You know, this is the dead zone. There's not a lot going on in the building. So actually today I'm out down the hall in the TV studio here. The old TV studio, which is now where they have the coaches' shows taped in there on TV and
right.
Some other things inside the Jaguars for the websites in there. Well, there's an archive of all these old beta tapes and digital, all these tapes from all the 20 years of the team that were either for the old Jumbotrons or for old TV use or the old coaches' show original tape. Well, it's all digital anyway. NFL Films has a lot of the stuff, at least the old game tapes, so we don't have to have that. So we're cleaning all that out today.
Right.
So I'm sweating up a storm a little bit, but we're down there today cleaning it out. And,
well, anything I can play at my house, can I just take home?
Well, there's no, unless you have a beta player.
How much would it cost me to get a beta player?
Yeah, you don't want to know. you really don't know. So that's what we're doing today, kind of cleaning out because there's going to be some new studio action down there and a lot of things going on. So.
Cool.
Getting ready for next week because, well, boy, 8 days away from players reporting.
8 days from players reporting, 9 days from camp getting started, and we'll talk about that in just a moment in the coverage that we can expect from you guys here in the building with Jaguars.com and everything. But it is this date in football history, and usually there's not much.
Oh, yeah, I interrupted you. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Alex Karras, yesterday was the biggest birthday. Today, man, do we have a list of guys for birthday. And I'm not even kidding.
Hit it.
We'll start with Jimmy Johnson. The former head coach at the U.
I've heard of him.
In Dallas and at Miami. Now he's with Fox and very successful at every level of his career. That was in 1943. Jimmy Johnson was born. His hair probably 10 years before that. Mm-hmm. O.J. Simpson, this date in 1947, was born. Now the infamous O.J. Simpson as he's spending his time in a jail cell. Also born today, my favorite running back of all time. Barry Sanders.
Hey, that's a good one.
In 1968. So Barry was born on this day. And the most important one of all, let us not be remiss and not mention it. Happy birthday, Cat. Jackson DeVille, the face behind the mask, is celebrating his birthday today.
Very
so
nice.
Happy birthday, Curtis, wherever he may be.
Oh, I'm sure where he is.
It's in a drunken stupor somewhere. It's where the Cat probably finds himself. But happy birthday to those guys. And Barry Sanders, man, he was just ridiculous. And actually, it's funny. I started, Mike and I play a lot and talk a lot of fantasy football.
Yes, you do.
I started playing fantasy football when I was 10 years old in 1993.
How old are you?
I'm 31 on Friday.
Oh, okay, all right.
31 on Friday. But started playing when
happy
I was
happy early birthday,
10.
Tony.
Thank you. And was doing just the neighborhood league. Like, my dad was like, hey, do you want to play fantasy football this year? I'm like, yeah, I want to play fantasy football. Now, my dad was doing it, I'm pretty sure, at this point, that he was doing it to make me learn basic algebra, because I had to keep score for the league. So I would go through, you know, the sheet every Monday morning and say, okay, we get a point for every 10 rushing yards, and I'd have to figure out what everyone scored that week. So I think he was trying to teach me math by letting me play fantasy football. But my first ever draft pick, I was the number two overall pick. My neighbor picked Emmett Smith, number one. I got Barry Sanders. Nice. He was the first fantasy pick I ever made in my life, and won me the league that year, too.
Well, I have a fantasy story, but it's you know, a little later in college, using fantasy football and fantasy basketball. We used to play all of those at the same time, right? So similar season. I executed a two-sport, two-league trade.
What?
And made everybody in both leagues mad. It was awesome.
Traded
all the basketball guys over to the guy in the football league because I wanted all the football guys.
That's
I didn't
crazy.
Care about winning the basketball.
I can't even, like...
So don't play fantasy football with
my
me.
Head is going to explode idea. A little bit just based... Yeah. I don't understand that.
I didn't win either league. Shocking.
But that is this date in football history, brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. And JP, got a few minutes here with you. We have, like we said, training camp starts in 9 days. I mean, they're on the field in 9 days. They're here in 8. The rookies are here in 6 or 7.
Yeah, there's
something.
Some guys are still around. You walk through the halls, and I know I went in the other day through the locker room. There were a few offensive linemen here doing their own personal workouts.
Right.
Cecil Shorts is still up in Minnesota. I don't think he had plans to go to the All-Star game last night, but he's still there doing work with Fitzgerald at that camp. So these guys scattered out, and then they'll all kind of reconvene here probably early next week. Some guys will come in early and just be around.
We know you got Jaguars Thursday coming up this week with Loggeman and Baselli and those guys.
I'll be here.
Assuming they're all back. I have no idea.
I don't think they are. I think I'll be back this week. I think, Jeff's out
Big
this
Bo
week.
In.
It'll be Big Bo and me. And... from what I understand, you know what? That's another one. Josh Scobie is out at Tahoe this week playing in that celebrity program.
That's right.
It's going to be on NBC Sports.
He was one of the favorites. He was a betting favorite.
Why not? Hey, go
for
it. In
Tahoe.
So we'll try to get a hold of him on Thursday night, too, after his first round.
Cool. But as far as next week, with training camp getting started up on Friday, what is the plan? Loosely, what is the plan for Jaguars.com as far as coverage camp?
We'll certainly have a presence out there all over the social media platforms for the Jaguars, from Brian Sexton, myself, John Osier. We'll be out there at practice, all the open practices, full force with that. We're still trying to figure out maybe like a social media center. We're working on that in the last couple of days. We're going to have probably a real presence there with a tent so people can come up and interact with us and such. Inside the Jaguars every day. Driven by Tom Bush, of course. And Jaguars.com Live will be on occasion, depending on the practice schedule and how much of practice we are able to show. So that's it's loosely, it depends on the day, basically, what's going on, because the schedule will change, and then we'll have, there's afternoon stuff going on, and when Gus talks, when he doesn't talk, it can all change in a day's notice, too. So
sure.
So basically, it'll be inside the Jaguars, some Jaguars.com Live mixed in there, too. Writing for John Osier every afternoon, morning and afternoon. Brian Sexton will continue to contribute his pieces as well for Inside the Jag. So a lot going on, and we're still in the process, even with a week to go, of figuring out what goes where.
That's kind of the way things work behind the scenes. If you think we had a plan, you're wrong. There was no plan. We threw it together at the last moment and tried to make it work. Have you had a chance to get out and see the scoreboards yet?
Oh, yeah. I walked out yesterday, actually, because I was gone for about a week, and I came back, and the north end looked finished, and it was actually on, so that's progress, I guess.
Sure.
I think this is the week, coming up, that there's not going to be a lot of visitors, no more tours or anything, because I think that platform, the north end platform, there's a lot of things that have to be done this week that you can't have people visiting. So this is the week, and I think I would... they're going to be on time, man, for the 25th, They're going to have the 26th, Saturday.
Yeah.
They'll have the big concert and the Fulham game and such.
I was going to say, they're 10 days from unveiling these things.
It's going to be pretty remarkable.
Isn't that crazy? You go back in time to just a year ago, basically, where they're like, hey, we're going to do this, and now they're here.
It's funny, reading the Ozone every morning. I don't know if you read it or not on Jaguars.com, Tony. There's a running thread on there now that people are asking John, hey, there was a pilot that had emailed him a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, I was flying at, I was a commercial flying over Jacksonville, and I saw it from 30,000 feet, and I was like, oh, man, that's important. Well, there's a running joke now, I guess, it may not be a joke. There's a guy in, like, Fort Myers. Oh, I was running on the beach. I saw the scoreboards.
Yeah.
The guy from Tokyo emails in, you know? Like, so there's
people
emailing.
Yeah, I saw the guy
in
from D.C. that was taking a jog around the Capitol. He's like, I was jogging around the Capitol, saw the new scoreboards.
I tell you what, though, in going over the bridges downtown, it's really remarkable to see the scope and the size of these things. If you haven't been downtown yet,
sure.
Just to drive by it, even if you don't see them on, it's really amazing because you can see, if you're up in the air, you can see them from a long way off.
And we're going to have a bunch of fans that, with practices open to the public as much as they are for training camp, are going to get an opportunity to see them from outside the stadium at least.
Yep.
Here in the next couple of weeks. Sure. Obviously, they got the game with Fulham coming next Saturday and the concert that'll unveil those things officially.
Are you a Carrie Underwood fan, Tony?
Not especially. I'm not a fan of Carrie Underwood's music. She's a beautiful woman. But
that's fair. No, that's fair.
I'm not much of a country
music fan. Is she the one
fan
that talks about hitting the headlights with a Louisville Slugger and all that? Is that her song?
Yes,
that's
her.
Okay.
That's her, yeah.
Don't
mess with
Warren.
Her. Don't mess with me. Don't mess with Carrie.
Yeah. As Mike says, you can watch her regrip the microphone. Apparently, she has a bad habit of regripping when she's on stage. But she'll be here. Are they unveiling the scoreboards during the soccer game, or is it going to be afterwards?
It is my understanding that it's after all that. Well, I haven't seen a full rundown of the whole. But my understanding is the soccer game, the concert, and then the big scoreboard thing.
Okay.
So that's obviously
whatever.
Up in the air, too. That's
I'll
my
be
guess.
Here that Saturday.
I just made that up, but it sounded pretty good.
Yeah, I'm going to be here.
I think the boards will be on for the concert.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Well,
so I'm not going to get it for the soccer game.
No, probably not.
I
well, you didn't have it for
correct.
The U.S. soccer game either. You had the corner boards for the soccer game.
Those yeah, they didn't. They weren't done for the U.S. soccer game. Yeah. They are now. If they're going to be done when the Fulham is playing.
That's true.
So
maybe they'll run them. I don't know.
Have them on. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. That's for next Saturday. But I'll be here for that and the unveiling of those scoreboards. We're just like 3 weeks away from a scrimmage down at the stadium. We're 3 weeks from Friday, I do believe it is now that they open up the preseason here against Tampa.
That means I better start working on pre- and post-game shows,
yeah.
Right?
So it's 24 days
it's coming up
to get those ducks in line, or
yeah.
However the heck they say it.
It's going to be it's funny because this offseason has gone away so quickly just because the draft was moved back, 2 weeks. So it seems
really
like
has.
In the past years, what, 6-7 weeks of off time or downtime here in the office. Now it's only like 5.
Yeah,
well, it's not. I mean, not complaining. I'm still, but it's a little different. And so people's schedules are a little off, and it's coming quick. Here it is.
No, it's like it put the whole off season in fast forward.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were complaining about, we got to talk about the draft for 2 more weeks. Well, first of all, are you really complaining because you got to talk about the draft? The draft is fun. It's this puzzle that you don't even know what the pieces are that you're trying to put together. That's a fun thing.
Is it?
I love leading up to the draft.
I don't think it's that fun, Tom.
I
love nuts.
All the draft talk leading up to it. I miss it every year. As soon as it's done, I'm like, man, we don't have that to talk about anymore.
You're insane.
I love that little puzzle of mine trying to put it together. But, look, they pushed it back 2 weeks, and because of that, everything got pushed back. We didn't have to wait 2 weeks, for the rookie minicamp and the OTAs and then the veteran minicamp. And then 5 weeks goes quick.
It does.
It goes really quick, and here we are. We got one of those 5 left.
What are you, Tony, I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure. Now.
What are you most excited about for this camp coming up? What's the battle you want to see the most?
The battle I want to see them. I am really curious when Josh Evans gets back on the field, what it's going to look like between he and Winston Guy, because Guy was a player last year that looked out of control at times, and at least during this offseason, he looked like he may have gotten some of that under control, but we haven't seen him able to hit anybody. We've seen him saluting when he thought he could. During the offseason at the mini camp and the OTAs, but Evans wasn't able to get out there on the field, and it's going to be vitally important who's playing that position next to Jonathan Cyprian. It's kind of that center field type guy,
yep,
because they want Cyprian to be able to play in the box a little
and
bit more,
yep,
help out with the run. So whoever's going to be back there is kind of the eraser for this defense, and are they going to be competent at doing that job? Because Winston last year, when he was given the opportunity to play, picked up a lot of unnecessary penalties and Who's going to have that?
Yeah, some of them were aggressive, though. I mean, you play hard, and sometimes you get penalized. That's
which
the way that
fine.
Happens. But and you'll see, interesting to see how Evans responds from that the heel thing. He had some bone
sure.
spurs.
But there's
cut
a bunch of
there,
stuff,
so
man. With all
he
the
hasn't been on the
receivers.
Field, you know. So
yeah, with all the rookie receivers coming in that we really haven't had a chance to see much from yet, and the battles along the offensive line at right guard.
Yeah, that right guard spot's going to be interesting because I mean, you would think. That Linder's going to be the guy, you would think, right?
Right.
You trade up,
you move
to,
up
to draft
him, right.
him. But then again, if McClendon plays, there's going to be a straight-up competition. And that was the first, when Gus talked about it a few weeks ago, that was the first position battle that he named was that right guard position.
Yep.
So I would keep that one in focus all training camp because it's going to go down to the wire, I think.
Sure. And whatever Branch can learn from Chris Clemens, all the better.
Yeah, true.
As we go into training camp and into the 2014 season. That is JP Chadwick. I appreciate you joining me for a couple minutes today on Jaguars Today.
You know, I'm glad you're here. This is great because, you know, Dempsey can go on vacation on some beach somewhere and you're in here grinding it out.
He's
man,
up
in
there
the off-season.
Jersey.
Even on his birthday on Friday, he's going to be grinding.
It's my birthday. I'll
like
be working.
It. This week? This Friday?
This Friday is my birthday.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll have to remember that.
Okay. I don't need a cake or anything.
No, I'm not getting you a cake.
Be a keg. Bring a keg.
A keg.
We'll see what
it's
we
more
can.
Like it.
We
no, but I appreciate this. This is you're in here grinding it out. Joe's in here. You're in here.
It's fun.
You got to fill the time. I like it.
I'm talking football for 2 hours. That's not all that difficult. I love doing it. JP, I appreciate you coming in for a few minutes.
Great to see you, Tony. Thanks.
And we'll hear from you again tomorrow night on Jaguar Thursday.
Is that tomorrow?
That's tomorrow. It's
holy
Wednesday, buddy.
Smokes. All right. I'll be ready.
This week is rolling.
See you, Tony.
That is JP Chadwick. We'll talk to John Murphy coming up here in just a few moments as we continue our look around the National Football League this week, focusing on the AFC East. This John Murphy covers the Buffalo Bills for WGR 550 up there in Buffalo. A lot of on-field and even more off-field to talk about with John. We'll dig into that next here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today. I am Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey on vacation all week long. T-Wig kind enough to join me for the first hour, and thanks again to him and JP Chadwick for stopping by here at the JOI Studios at Everbank Field. Metro Rooter for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service, and much more. They offer same-day service Saturday and Sunday included. The right people, the right equipment. They have been serving Jacksonville since 1978. Just go to MetroRooter.com or call 904-695-1911 to get in touch with the people over there at Metro Rooter today. Right now, we turn our attention to the look around the National Football League. We are in the AFC East this week. Our stop today up in Buffalo with the Buffalo Bills. John Murphy, kind enough to join us. He is with WGR 550 up there in Buffalo, as well as a Buffalo Bills reporter. You can follow him on Twitter at John Murphy Show. John, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And before we get into any of the on-field questions with the Buffalo Bills and Sammy Watkins and E.J. Manuel specifically, what are you hearing about away from the field as far as the potential new ownership for the Buffalo Bills?
Well, there's been a lot of reports and a lot of rumors. The process is moving along. Right now, for the next couple of weeks or so, the potential suitors will be submitting their bids. That is supposed to end at the end of the month, July 29th. And then the trustees that have been put together by virtue of Ralph Wilson's will sort through the bids and see which one matches whatever the you know, the will says, and try to get the best price. So the process of moving along, I think, as far as the timetable, it would not surprise me if the owner is identified late this summer, maybe early into September, and the transaction, I think, could be completed as soon as this October, pending league approval. So I think the process is moving along.
And without knowing who that new ownership group or person is going to be, it's maybe not an easy question to answer, but what is your gut feeling about the long-term stability of Buffalo in Buffalo as opposed to having to be moved?
Well, I think they're in pretty good shape. When the Bills, under Ralph Wilson, signed a lease back in December of 2012, as part of that lease, there was a non-relocation agreement that is pretty strict. It would take a lot for the team to move. certainly they can't go anywhere for the next 7 years, and then there's a one-year window, and then that window closes after 1 year, and they're locked in for another 3 years. So essentially the next 10 years are guaranteed by virtue of the lease that was signed in December of 2012. There also is, as part of that lease, a mechanism to begin discussion of a new stadium, whether one is needed, where one should go, how should it be paid for. And so the new stadium discussion can take place without any you know, threats of moving or any sort of superheated atmosphere like we've got to get this done, which I think is a good idea. I'm pretty confident, you know, based on what the owners were saying at the owners' meetings and a month or so ago, I'm pretty confident that there is no sentiment for the team to move. They've established a pretty strong regional base in upstate New York and into southern Ontario, and I think there are a lot of forces at work that are going to ensure that the Bills stay in Buffalo and western New York for a long time.
John Murphy joining us on Jaguars today to talk about the Buffalo Bills. He's with WGR 550 up in Buffalo. You can follow him on Twitter at John Murphy Show. And let's turn our attention to what's actually going on the field for the Bills now, John. And it starts with the quarterback position everywhere in the league. How would you evaluate E.J. Manuel's rookie season, and what has he looked like this offseason transitioning to his second year?
Well, I guess I'd give him an incomplete for his rookie season. He started 10 games. Had some ups and downs, but missed a total of six games with a couple of different knee injuries, one early on and then one at the end of the year. There were sort of fluky knee injuries, too, nothing serious, nothing that required major off-season surgery. So I think the first job for E.J. Manuel is to make sure that he's healthy and can play all 16 games this year. He had ups and downs last year. He had some, you know, good comeback wins, including one against Carolina in his first home start, and I think there's a lot of good things to like about E.J. Manuel. There are some rough spots, too. I think the Bills would like to see him, you know, brush up his fundamentals and be more accurate. I think the Bills would like to see him get through his decision-making process a little quicker than he did last year. There were signs of that coming along during the OTAs and minicamps over the early summer, but they need to see more, and I think they will. The job is his. They are all in with E.J. Manuel. There's no question that he's their quarterback going forward, and the Bills have hired a quarterback coach this year to work directly with E.J. Manuel, Todd Downing, who worked with Matthew Stafford at Detroit for a couple of years, and they have Nathaniel Hackett overseeing the entire offense, and he spends a lot of time with E.J. So the guy's a great worker. He's got a great attitude. I think he has shown the makings of a good leader. His mental approach is there. They just got to work on some fundamentals and get him up to speed when it comes to accuracy and decision-making, I believe.
The Bills made the decision in the first round this year to go get Sammy Watkins, the big-time receiver out of Clemson. What has the fan reaction been to that? I'm sure they're all kinds of thrilled. And generally speaking, teams that have had the problems on a roster that the Buffalo Bills seem to have had aren't taking wide receivers that high in the draft. Are they in a position to take full advantage of what Sammy Watkins can bring to the table?
Yeah, I think so. I think what they were trying to do is build around E.J. Manuel, give him all the weapons he needs. And I think by most accounts, Sammy Watkins has the potential to be a major, you know, game-breaking type receiver in the league. Maybe not right out of the box, but certainly it shouldn't take too long. I think they went into the draft determined to surround E.J. Manuel with tools and people to work with and protection. They drafted three offensive linemen in the draft as well. The roster, I think, is pretty good, actually. Most of the question marks of the Bills center around E.J. Manuel. They have depth and some talent on the offensive line. They added Watkins to the receiving core, a young, untested receiving core, but a pretty good core nonetheless. They have one of the best running attacks in the league with C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson, and they added a couple of pieces to that. And they were one of the top defenses in the league. They were a top-10 defense last year with among the league leaders in sacks and interceptions. So if they can get the quarterback up to speed, yeah, I think the roster's in pretty good shape other than the uncertainty as to what they're going to get from E.J. Manuel.
And obviously a big loss on the defensive side is Kiko Alonso was so good for the Bills last year as a rookie, but he has been lost for the year. Is Brandon Spikes going to be the one stepping into that middle linebacker spot, and what does the rest of that core look like for the Bills?
Well, Kiko was going to play outside anyway this
right.
year. When they acquired Brandon Spikes, they said at the time that Kiko Alonso was going to play weak side outside linebacker in a newly constituted 4-3 defense. So Spikes is the middle linebacker. He'll be backed up by a pretty good-looking rookie, a third-rounder in Preston Brown. And without Kiko Alonso, they're probably looking at a third-year guy, Nigel Bradham, who played his college football down in Florida. They have also Keith Rivers, a free agent acquisition for the New York Giants. There's talk that maybe Preston Brown, the third round pick out of Louisville, could play outside. But, they have some depth there at the linebacker spot. Kiko's gonna be a big loss, no question about that. He was a great playmaker and, a high motor, high intensity guy for the Bills last year. And I think many of us were eager to see how much better Kiko might be in station or playing outside and not having to take on all those, centers and guards, firing out from the offensive line. That won't happen this year now. But I do think, they're pretty well set as far as depth at the linebacker spot.
John Murphy with WGR 550 up in Buffalo. He's a reporter for the Buffalo Bills, joining us here to talk about the Bills and the running back position. C.J. Spiller was a guy that everyone expected to take a big step forward last season after a really good second half of the year a couple of years ago. What do you expect to be the split between he and Jackson and maybe even a guy like Bryce Brown who they brought in there for the backfield for the Bills?
Yeah, I think if CJ had remained healthy and been healthy last year, he probably would have got most of the carries with a healthy dose for Fred Jackson. CJ had a knee injury early on and then a high ankle sprain during the course of the season that he couldn't quite shake. And so he didn't get the kind of work that he wanted. He missed a couple of games, but couldn't get, you know, the regular work that I think he needed. He is perfectly healthy now. I anticipate he'll resume his role as the number one back, but they like the combination they have with CJ as sort of the speed guy, the outside guy, and Fred Jackson pounding the ball between the tackles. Fred is 33 years old, I believe, and probably got another year or two left. And he's become more of a physical runner in the last couple of years, very valuable in the passing game for protection and as a pass receiver in his own right. I would think the split would probably be close between the two, with maybe CJ getting most of the carries. Bryce Brown is an interesting acquisition, maybe an insurance policy in case there's injury there. And they have another guy, Booby Dixon, a free agent signee from San Francisco, who I think is a physical running back who I think will probably get more than his share of carries in short yardage and goal line situations. So I think they have some good depth and some pretty good talent at the running back spot.
All right, John, as we wrap things up with you, the Bills out there in the East obviously chasing the New England Patriots and have been for over a decade now. They're in the AFC East, as has everyone else in the East. How high do you think the Bills can climb this year? Is 8-8 a realistic goal for them, or do you think they're a little bit below that still?
No, I think they can win 8, maybe even 9 games this year, really. You know, they've been chasing the Patriots ever since Tom Brady arrived, as the rest of the AFC East. I think, you know, they'll be fighting with the Jets and the Dolphins for second place. You know, they did a pretty good job last year beating the Dolphins twice and splitting with the Jets. They need to pick up some other wins, you know, 6 wins last year. I don't think a 3-win improvement is too much to ask. I think they can win 9 and challenge for a wild card spot this year.
All right, that is John Murphy. John, we appreciate you giving us a few minutes of your time today. I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
No problem. My pleasure, Tony.
All right. He is with WGR 550 up in Buffalo. He was a reporter for the Buffalo Bills. You can follow him on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Kind enough to join us and talk about the Buffalo Bills as we continue our tour around the NFL this week, obviously in the AFC East, as we're just 6 weeks away, basically, from the National Football League getting started. I believe 6 weeks from tomorrow is the opening game, if I am not mistaken, which is just crazy to think about, that it's already here upon us. So we will continue our look around the National Football League. We'll hit the Jets tomorrow. Mike going on vacation specifically because he's tired of talking about the Jets and how poor they are. So he's decided this was the week he needed to be gone. We'll talk Jets tomorrow, but here in just a moment, we're going to get to your feedback. The fan feedback spotlight today asked, what Jaguar that has been here since before Gus and Dave, that regime came in, is the most important for the Jaguars' success in 2014? We'll get to your responses via Twitter. You can send them now at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. We'll take a look at those. The best response, or the one we choose, not necessarily the best, I guess it's just the decision that we make, will be rewarded with a Jaguars Today t-shirt. As I've heard, we got some new ones in stock. So we're back stocked, ready, and loaded. We'll get to that here in just a moment on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Yeah. Wig is somewhere bobbing his head.
You know, I saw him in the building a little bit ago, so maybe he's in the billiard room.
Bobbing his head.
Bobbing that head.
Yeah, don't touch the billiard table. When you play on the billiard table, you get sent to the attic. That's what Mike and I like to say.
That's what I've heard. And I know that the actual pool table is covered, but I still like calling that room the billiard room. It's kind of like a clue thing.
Yeah. When we got the pool table, people would often go play some pool on there. Anyone I think that has ever played a game of pool on that table has been fired at one point or another.
And that's what I've heard. And, you know, I remember hearing that story and thinking the first time I heard it, I was like, where's the pool table? Because it is covered up, even though it's a large entity in that room. And for those of you who have not been to the studios, the studio itself is up front, or to the station, I should say. The studio is up front and the control room's up front. And then there's this large room in the middle of the building. And there's a pool table that's covered up in there. I never even noticed it because it is covered up. And
yeah.
I was never going to play. I'm working.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. You don't play pool while you're at work.
Exactly.
But it's there, I guess, in case we ever do get the itch and someone wants to spend their off day playing pool at the workplace. I guess they could come in and do that. But
I can think of better places. That's
yeah,
all.
I can too. But we're going to get to the fan feedback spotlight here. Mike Dempsey on vacation. I am Fat Tony. T-Wig kind enough to join me today, as well as JP Shadrick. Well, it was fun. John Murphy a few moments ago talking about the Buffalo Bills, and that's a team that he has a lot more confidence in than I do. And that's kind of this time of year where everyone feels pretty good. It's the season to talk right now. And then here in a month, month and a half, it'll be the season to walk, where some people will be walking with their heads held high and some will be making the walk of shame by the time everything is said and done. And I just, my gut tells me that Buffalo is more in the latter category than they are the former. But he believes they can win 8 or 9 games this year. I just don't see it with the way that the Buffalo Bills are put together. But they're in a weak division, so we'll see how high they can climb. The Tom Bush family of dealerships asked Jaguar fans, what drives you? Today in the Tom Bush fan feedback spotlight, we ask you, what player that was here basically before Gus and Dave got here, before the current regime, what player that was here before those guys got here is the most important for the Jags team success in 2014, so in the upcoming season? And some of the responses we got via Twitter, including this from Issachar, who said, Pozlesny, defense will make us competitive during games. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag I remembered the hashtag. So he's proud
Love
of
it.
Himself. From Cam, Pozlesny, relentless motor and leadership. The team's success relies heavily on the D this year. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Joey, Henny isn't the quarterback. He's just a quarterback. Branch will be more important to this team by season's end. Hashtag sorry, Chad. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Sean, the QB is the leader of the offense and the team, so it's got to be Henny. Live and die by the quarterback. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Kevin, I'm going to go with Lewis. Needs to stay on the field. Key in the run game as well. Hashtag Jaguars today. That would be Mercedes. From Irish Jag, Chad Henny, the team goes as the quarterback goes. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Dilla, we got simply Mike Brewster. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Ocho Ficho, you may laugh, but Brian Anger, and laugh I do at you, Ocho. He really seemed to improve the second half. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Christoph at MercedesLewis89, great run blocker and underrated pass catcher. Hashtag Jaguars today. And from the football guy, Puz, without a doubt, the upgraded D-line should open up more holes for him to increase his tackle numbers. Hashtag Gene Smith. Hashtag Jaguars today. And I got one more on Twitter I'm going to get to here in just a moment. But first, get out to Facebook and some of y'all's responses via the Facebook page with Jaguars Today. Puzz, because he has to lead this young defense, hashtag Jaguars Today. That from George. From Chris, we got Henny. QB is always the most impactful position on the field, and the Jaguars need Chad as a leader and mentor now, and eventually as a quality backup when Blake takes over. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Patrick, we got CS3. That would be Cecil. Chad needs a veteran playmaker. Hashtag can't make plays from the cold tub. Hashtag Jaguars today. And from David, it has to be Chad Henny. It will be hard to keep Bortles on the bench if he isn't playing well. Hashtag Jaguars today. We got a bunch of Cecil responses there via Facebook as well, but you guys aren't including the hashtag, so you don't get read.
Bam.
It's simple. But finally, on Twitter, from Bubba Gump. And I'm not saying that this is going to win him a t-shirt, but I did enjoy this, so I will share it with you, Jacksonville and Jaguar listening nation. Yesterday, Bubba was not happy with me that he didn't win the shirt because he thought he had pandered to me enough that he should have. But I told him we just gave it to somebody else, man. I don't know what to tell you. And he participates every day, but today he sent me this. at 1010XL Fat Tony. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag Vandy. Hashtag Braves. Hashtag soccer. Hashtag Blazing Saddles. Hashtag Shut Up Randy. Hashtag NFL. Hashtag The Fat Tony Show. Hashtag Pandering. Wait! What was the question? So Bubba's trying his best to pander to get himself a t-shirt. I appreciate
that. That's a lot of hashtags.
That is a ton of hashtags, and I appreciate the effort. But we'll figure out who we're going to give that free t-shirt to today, and we'll have another question for you tomorrow that you can participate in each day. Remember to include that hashtag Jaguars today so that we notice it, and we try to read every one of those that send that with the hashtag every day. Sometimes we don't get to all of them, but bear with us. We try to give out a t-shirt as well, as we got a couple new boxes of they're the same t-shirt, by the way. We're not changing the model or the brand or anything like that. It's the same.
Thank you for clarifying.
Jaguars today t-shirt, but we are locked and loaded with a couple more boxes so we can really kick this thing off again, giving these things away, and we'll choose a winner a little bit in just a bit, as Lauren and I will discuss it as we get to the break here in just a couple minutes. One thing before we send it out to the boys of XL Primetime, as they'll be live for day three of our coverage of SEC Media Days, the coverage all week being brought to you by Marine Max. But before we get to that, there was a story that came out earlier today involving Brett Favre. And look, I really like Brett Favre. He's one of my favorite players of all time. The first jersey, the first football jersey I ever had was Brett. Loved the way he played the game. That kind of, it was like watching a kid play in the National Football League, running around, that improvisational style that he had to his game. I loved watching him. I thought that a lot of the criticism that Favre took towards the end of his career was a little bit unwarranted. As I said earlier today, if someone's willing to pay you to do something that you can't get paid that kind of money to do anything else, then you do it. So if there are teams that want to offer Brett Favre $2, $3, $4, $5 million to come back and play quarterback, is he supposed to say no to that kind of money? Where else is he going to make up that money? It's gone if he says no to it. So I never blamed him for that. And he's obviously a guy who stayed healthy for most of his career. There at the end, it was kind of a mess of injuries for Brett Favre, and that's eventually why he really walked away from the game. But one of the best, and Brett came out, and he was talking with a radio station in his home, near his hometown, and he was asked about, you know, young people playing the game of football and would he let his kids play the game. It's a little odd to ask a guy like Brett Favre that question because he has no kids. He doesn't have any sons that he has to make this kind of decision about. So what does it matter what Brett Favre thinks about would you let your kid play football? He doesn't know whether he would let his kid play football because he doesn't have to face that kind of decision. But what Brett basically said is no, and he gave two reasons. And the first reason was that he didn't want to have his son having to live basically in the shadow of Brett Favre and live up to what it is to be, you know, Brett Favre's kid. Which is understandable. That's completely reasonable. And he also said no because of how dangerous and physical the game is. And I think that's where a lot of people have kind of taken exception with what Brett had to say. Again, given that he doesn't have a son to make that kind of call on. He really doesn't know. I can tell you that I think that if I had a son, if I have a son sometime in the future, and we get to the age where he's getting 10, 11, 12 years old and he wants to start playing football, I'll have to seriously consider whether or not I'm going to let him play before he's 14 or 15 or 16 years old, before he's developed a little bit. I'm not sure what my answer to that question would be. I know there's a lot of people here in town who have their kids playing, you know, the peewee football and all that kind of stuff, and that's great. I have no problem with you wanting to do that. If your kid wants to play, I'm saying that it would be a decision that I would have to make when I'm faced with it, not in a hypothetical, would I let my kid play football? I don't know, because I don't have one, so I don't have that decision to make. But Brett Favre, once again, in the headlines, talking about something, and I think he's talking a little bit out of place, and he could have just said, look, I don't have a kid, I don't know what I would do. And I don't think anyone would blame him. There also wouldn't be a headline about it if he had just said, I don't want anyone to play in my shadow. Everyone would have understood that, and that's all he had to say. I really don't understand why he's even taking the stance that he does. But with that, we're going to wrap things up here on Jaguars Today for a Wednesday. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on the program. We're going to hand things over to Josie and Hacker as XL Primetime live on the road for a couple more days as we continue our coverage here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM of SEC Media Days. Coverage brought to you by Marine Max. Want to say thank you to T-Wig. Want to say thank you to JP Shadrick, for Joe Fortunato, for Lauren back in the studio who's had a long, long day already, and I know you're just only about halfway through it, Lauren, so we appreciate it. And for myself and also John Murphy, want to say thank you for listening to today's edition of Jaguars Today. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Right now, we head out to Hoover for day 3 of SEC Media Days here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.